Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the show, everybody. This is Karina Morrison, the host and producer of Citizen Voice Project. Today's show, we are going to have a fantastic gentleman named Marcus Clark. He's the founder of Sweat for Life Ministries, and I'm actually going to have to hold on a second. I don't know if you can hear that, but we're having a little bit of issue here. Hold on.
Hold on a second.
Got it. Well, that's what you get for having live radio. Okay, we're got Marcus Clark. He's the founder of Sweat for Life Ministries, a native of St. Petersburg. I met Marcus, about a year ago in quite an interesting situation. And it was what some people may say a chance meeting. I think it was divinely inspired. So I wanted to welcome you to the show. Marcus, how are you doing today?
I'm doing good. How are you doing, Karina?
I'm good. Now that I've got my laptop muted. Anyway, well, Marcus has got a rally coming up tomorrow. I want you to let everybody know about that first so you can invite them to come out, because that's exciting news.
Yes, if anybody is interested and want to hear the gospel of Jesus Christ preach, the message that I preach a lot of as an evangelist, youth speaker, mentor, I do a lot of inspirational speaking and preaching also. We have an event going on tomorrow at Gateway Christian Community Center. It will be on 4355 Central Avenue, St. Petersburg, Florida. And that will start at, the doors open at 6:30. I call it a youth revival, but it's open to any and everybody. Adults can come too. Just bring a youth if you do. If not, that's okay. But the doors open to that at 6:30 p.m. Friday night. And the word will get started about 7 o'clock. So come in and have some fun meeting some people and hear the word. You know, we all get fulfilled when we hear the word of God speak.
That's true. And you are a very powerful speaker. And you have a phenomenal life story as well. Just to give our listeners a little bit of insight, I was actually helping to manage a congressional campaign for a third-party candidate in Pinellas County. And I was organizing an event, and we were going to be meeting at a Panera Bread and having a Google Hangout with the candidate and online. And so we had gotten the room in Largo, Florida to air the show. And so I showed up early to the room, and Marcus was there with your Toastmasters team, and you were practicing one of your speeches, and I was just so impressed by hearing your speech and listening to the passion that you have when you do speak. And anyway, the event didn't turn out quite as well as I expected it to. Nobody showed up, but we were able to speak with you afterwards, and it was just the beginning of what I call a beautiful friendship, because I really enjoy your heart and your soul and what you do for others and in your community. So that is how we met, by chance.
Yes, it was a funny kind of experience where at the time we were in there practicing for me and my Toastmasters members. We was in there practicing for my speech that I had coming up, and I just really didn't. I saw you sitting there, and I didn't want to perform because I wasn't comfortable with performing, you know, practicing in front of people. I can perform and speak in front of people, but practice is like you're going to see me mess up, you know. So I wasn't interested in having people see me mess up. And I just was like, okay, well, I'm just going to go, and hopefully I don't interrupt her, and if she overhears, then good. But you know, nobody showed up to your event, but, you know, it was still a win-win situation. You know, you were able to book me as a speaker for the reopening of the Martin Luther King Coalition Center, and that turned out very phenomenally well.
Oh, that was great. You did make an impression on quite a few people. In fact, my father made the comment that you reminded him of Dr. King, the way you spoke and how you carried yourself. So, and that came from somebody that actually heard him speak in person before he was taken away from us. So you do have an impact on people.
That was definitely, I get that a lot. I get that. I got that feedback a lot from some people where they said, I could see where people want to pull me into that arena of Dr. Martin Luther King and other great speakers like him and people who, you know, community speakers. I've heard somebody say Malcolm X too, and I've even heard Billy Graham. So I've heard people give me a few names, but, you know, that's some great company to even be a part of, just what they did and accomplished for the community and for the sake of heaven. And I just feel honored when people mention that kind of thing about me, because I never really, as a humble person, I really never even see myself having done anything to even deserve the success I've gotten.
Well, first, let's explain a little bit about what Sweat for Life Ministries is, and what Sweat, I knew you before when it was Sweat for Success, what that stands for, too.
Well, I named it, it was a transition in my life going on when I was naming the ministry. I knew it was going to be a speaking mentoring ministry at the beginning, and then I saw this, you know, it was going to be a program, and then I saw it go to ministry. And this was, you know, I'm a big praying worshiper guy of God, and I'm always listening for his voice and when he speaks to me, and he makes it very clear on certain things. So I named it at the beginning Sweat for Success, but I already knew what he told me to name it, and I just went with Sweat for Success because I wanted to reach a broader audience and spectrum with that word. And he kept telling me to drop that name Success because it's confusing to some people when I speak in my ministry form, when I speak about God. He didn't want people to get confused with success, equating that with God. Like, you know, he didn't want no confusion about that. He just wanted this to be about life. And that reaches a broader spectrum too. You know, just having, reaching people to live. And what I named it, Sweat for Life, the sweat portion, S-W-E-T, was derived from the scripture. This scripture God gave me at the time of my life while I was going through a bad, you know, transition. And God gave me the scripture, and it was Ephesians 4:29. It means speak words of encouragement. It's speak words of edification. So I took edification and I put encouragement there because that's the same word, you know. It's just, so I named it speak words of encouragement today. And when he made me drop success, I went with life. And that was the scripture, Luke 15:7 says, it is more joy in heaven for one life who is repentant and is saved than it is for 99 already repent and already saved. So he was basically telling me, Marcus, your job is to get out there and reach one life. You don't need to reach 1,000. You don't need to reach 100. You don't need to reach 200. You just need to get out there and focus on reaching one. And that's what my goal has been, is to just mentor young kids one-on-one, two-on-one, you know, however many I get mentored. My goal is that my aim and my goal is to inspire each individual like I'm talking to them personally. Even when I'm talking in a room full of people, I try and make it seem like I'm talking to an individual because I want that person to know that what I'm speaking, it pertains to you, and you need to get this. And they feel it. They feel it all the time. And they, you know, like you said, the passion. They feel that passion coming from me, and they feel like I'm talking to them because that's how I aim my messages.
That's great. I would like for our listeners to know where that inspiration and passion came from. So if you don't mind talking a little bit about growing up and your experience as a young father and how it moved you into where you are today.
Oh, well, basically, the story of my life is just, you know, lots of people can look at me, and if you see me on Facebook, you see me doing my poetry events, wherever you see me, you kind of, you know, being a born native of St. Pete, most people ask, like, who is you and where did you come from? Well, the fact of the matter is, when I was 16 years old, I dropped out of high school in the ninth grade. So this is the time where you make your friends at. This is a time where you get to know people at. And I didn't get to meet and make friends during my high school years because I dropped out early. 16 years old, I left home. And I was born in the South, you know, I was born in the South Side, you know, raised in a house of 8 children. I'm the second oldest of 8. And my mother was on welfare. My dad was the only worker in the house, but you can't afford much when one person is working. So my mom was a welfare recipient, and I was the second oldest boy out of 6 girls, and I had a brother who was born last, but my sisters, I had 6 sisters. So a 16-year-old boy cannot live in a house of girls. And my goal was to just, you know, you go crazy. One thing you want to do is rip every one of their heads off. You know, I always like to say, you know, my father, my dad raised me to never hit a girl, but I tell you what, I wanted to choke every last one of them. You know what I'm saying? So hey, you know, I couldn't hit him, but boy, I was feeling like I wanted to wrap my hands around their throats, but I just couldn't do it, so I had to get out, and I did. I ran away. I won't say I ran away. I just left. I left home. You know, I didn't run away necessarily. I just never came back. At 16, I kind of just went and did my own thing. I felt like I could survive on my own. Got out on the street corners and did what I saw everybody else doing. They were all dropouts. They were all, you know, for lack of a better term, low lives, you know. We were all low lives living on street corners and selling drugs, selling dope, selling marijuana, selling whatever we could sell, whatever we get our hands on to sell, we were selling it because we were young, we had no sense, and we didn't know any better. And all we wanted to do was make money to survive and eat and smoke weed all day, and that's what I did. And as I got older, I started to get a little bit smarter about the drug game and started to get a little bit more money in it and get more involved. And then you start to see the things starting to happen. Then you start to see yourself losing friends. I was losing friends. I lost friends to guns. I lost about 3 friends to gun violence. And I've lost about 3 more friends running from the police in car chases, running into a tree. And I've lost a few friends to prison, life in prison. I mean, these were all friends we were on, I was on the street corners with. And these same guys, you know, this was the way my life was projecting. But for some odd reason, I felt like I got spared every time. I just got spared. And what happened with me was I just, after having, coming off the street corners, being on the street corners, I became a father. I met my girlfriend at 19 years old. I became a father early on at 19 years old. As soon as I met my girl, she got pregnant, and I became a father, you know, and then I, you know, had my daughter, and, you know, we're living on the street corner again. I'm living in my girl's house. I turned her house into a drug house, and now we're selling drugs out of her house, me and my cousins and friends, and I take her and move her to another house on the north side while we stay on the south side, and I just began getting into drugs even heavier, you know, selling it more, and just went to jail multiple times on drug charges, multiple times on, driving. At the time, I had no license, but, you know, I have one now. But at the time, I was going to jail for driving without license, you know, drug possession, back-to-back kind of stuff like that. And I just, one day, my friend kind of just, I had friends, you know, who were getting hooked on these drugs. Crack cocaine was our drug of choice to sell. Well, one of my friends, I had 2 of my friends actually, but one of them that was really close to me, real good close friend, I brought him into the game. He ended up getting hooked on the crack cocaine, and he just became all out, you know, crackhead. And the thing was about my friend was he was just a crackhead. He wasn't like what you would associate with every other crackhead, which is a thief or a liar or a cheat or dishonest or any of those things. But my other friends who weren't crackheads would accuse him and claim him as such, when I knew personally he wasn't those things. I knew he wasn't a thief. I knew he wasn't a liar. I knew he wasn't dishonest. But because it was the majority versus the minority, I fell in line with the majority and started to calling him the same names they were calling him. You know, I was feeling bad for it. I didn't want him. I didn't want to call him those names because I loved the guy. I knew the guy personally, you know, as where he was from. But I fell in line with everybody else and started to call him those names. And, you know, I always tell kids, this is why my message is speak words of encouragement today. because I tell kids, listen, your words, you know, bullying is a heavy epidemic in our country, especially in our middle schools and elementary and middle schools. So I tell these kids, speak words of encouragement, because what you say can affect that person and it can drive them. It can make them want to do things that you just don't want to be responsible for, you know, because of what you said to them. It was our words. It was our words,
right,
that made, you know, made my friend do what he did to me. Before I go into telling that, but I tell these young kids, hey, you know, your words could be responsible for a person ending their own life. You know, your words could be the words that can drive a person to just say, hey, this is the final straw, I've had enough, and they want to go jump off some building or some bridge. You got to be careful what
right.
you say to people, and or it can do the total opposite. It can do what some of these young kids you see, like, I bet, you know, I figured it was with the Columbine kids who they were victims of bullying, and what did they do? They went back to their school and shot the school up. This is, you know, these Columbine kids. So, and it's the same thing happened with my friend. You know, he was a victim of our bullying. And what did he do? He jumped in my car one day and turned the gun on me, put a gun to my head. And it was my gun. You know, he just so happened to get it. It was not get it from me like it was on me. He just so happened to know where I keep some of my guns at, and he had it. And he put the gun on me. And now all my guns at this time, I was a young thug, you know, well, all my guns stay loaded. When you're living in the streets, you got to keep a gun loaded. And so I
right.
knew his gun was loaded. Well, he didn't have to remind me. He didn't have to tell me if the gun was loaded. But I knew the gun was loaded. My friend jumped in the car and put a gun to my head. And what did he do? He wanted to rob me. He got all my money, everything else. Took the gun, and I thought he was playing at first. This was my mindset. You know, he was playing because he's my friend. So I'm telling him, you know, his name was Chicago. You know, we called him, nickname was Chicago, but his, you know, his name is Charles. You know, I don't know if he's even alive right now today. From last I heard, he was sick, you know, but I haven't heard from him in a while, but the guy with nickname was Chicago. And when he put the gun on my head and robbed me, which he got everything off of me, he did what I didn't think he would do next, when he pulled the trigger. Because I thought he was
wow.
joking, and he was telling me this was not a joke. He was saying, this is not a joke. This is not me playing. I'm not playing. And he took the gun and pointed out the window and shot one round off, just so he
wow.
knew. I knew, just so I knew the gun was loaded. When he brought the gun back inside, he put this hot tip on my head, and he was like, this is not a game. So he robbed me. I gave him everything, and, you know, he did what I didn't think he would do next. He pulled the trigger. Now, when he
wow.
pulled the trigger, my eyes closed because I heard this gun trying to go off, and I can hear it jamming. And I'm thinking, oh, he just tried to kill me. And I turned
wow.
to look at him, and he jumped out my car, and he ran. And he told me, he said, I'll be back to finish the job, is what he said. But while he was robbing me, tears was coming down his eyes, because he was telling me at the time, Marcus, I don't want to do this. I don't want to do this, but you were with them. You were lying, telling me I'm this and I'm that, accusing me of stealing from you guys when I never stole anything from you. You know I never stole anything from you. You know I would never steal anything from you. But y'all made me out to be this thief, and I wasn't. And that was true. I always tell people, I say, you know, just because he was a crackhead doesn't mean he was a thief. Just because he was a crackhead doesn't mean he was a liar. But we associated those things with him. And he wasn't
right.
either of those things. I knew he was, because I kept him, like, under my wing, you know. One of those guys you just got to look out and watch out for. I always kept him under my wing, but he was never one of those guys who did any of those things. And I knew that for a fact. But he was telling me that while he was robbing me. Pulled the trigger, jumped out my car, and ran when the gun didn't go off. And reminded, told me he'd be back to finish the job. Now, I've not seen him since. I've not seen him since then. That was in 2006. That was 2006 my friend did that. And I tell everybody this too. I say, little do everybody know, while my friend had a gun in my head, I say 15 minutes or 20 minutes prior to that, my girl's mother called me at the hospital. And she said, Marcus, you need to get to the hospital. I said, well, why? My girl, she said, because Lucinda's in labor. I said, what? My girl was pregnant at the time. And she went into labor. You know, and I said, what? But me being this young thug, want to make money, I didn't even care about getting to the hospital. It wasn't my first priority. My first priority and my first love was money. So I said, I told her on the phone, okay, I'll be there. I figured had I been there, had I went there, the incident with my friend would never happen. But the incident, everything played out the way it was supposed to for me to do what I'm doing today. You know what I mean? So when I got to the hospital, after my friend robbed me, nobody knows. I tell them this, you know, after. But, you know, during that time, my girl was in labor, and I was begging him, you know, at that time, please, man, I'm about to have a son. Let me, come on, bro, don't do this. I'm about to have a son. Let me get to the hospital. And he just didn't care, and he pulled the trigger. Now, here I am, made it out alive, and I'm on my way to the hospital now because I'm like, this is where I should have been. And I'm pleading and begging and pleading and begging and pleading and begging with God. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you, God. I would never enter that lifestyle ever, ever, ever again. But the thing was, when I get to the hospital, I'm promising God all these promises, and I lied to God. Because soon after that, after my son's birth, soon after that, I went back and I got back into the streets.
Well, it's hard. You know, I mean, you've made a life that way, and you know, even today with the economic situation and some of the kids in North Greenwood, one of the charities that I'm working with is Impact Zone, and it's Joellen and Blair Waller, and they work with the gang kids, the street kids in North Greenwood, and just trying to get them to get educated and to find some type of job that will give them a chance. And a lot of these kids, they're felons before they're 18.
Right.
And right. Just finding a business that will give them a chance. They want to work, but the draw of the money on the street and you know, and that lifestyle is really strong because of the economic situation and just growing up that way. But
Well, 71% of all African-American households, I think this number is higher now, I'm not sure, but last I checked, 71% of all African-American households in this country, fatherless homes. I couldn't even believe that number. I said, no, I'm talking African-Americans. I said, no way. And I had to do some digging, and that was the number that kept coming up. I said, wow, this is absolutely crazy to me. That 71% of African American homes are fatherless homes. And I said, wow, this is where the epidemic happens at. This is where it's coming in at. This is how it's so easy to get out in that lifestyle because their dads are a part of the lifestyle and they don't see their dad, so they're wondering where their dad's at. But last they heard of their dad was just, some drug dealer on the street corner. So not looking for their dad, they just end up getting out there on the street corners too, because it's a trend, and these kids are like, they have no focus, and this is why they have no leaders, they have no mentors, they have nobody guiding them, and this is why I make it so important, I make it so my mission to be that voice for them, because I want to show them that I am that guy. I tell them, hey, I'm a father to you. I'll be your father. I'll be the father to the fatherless. I'll be the father to those who don't have any hope. Just look at me. Listen to me, my life. Listen to what I did. I was deep in it. I was steeped in it. I was that guy. I was the one on the corners. I did it all. I've been in and out of the criminal justice system. I've had the drugs. I've had the guns. I've had, you know, the bouts with alcohol. And I mean, I've seen it. I know what it's like. It's an ugly life. And the fact of the matter was, I started early. I was 14 years old when I got out in the streets. I was 15 years old when I started to see what this lifestyle was offering. 16 is when I actually left home and said, you know what, this seems like a better route for me. But I just tried to reach these kids through personal experience, my life, making it personal to them. And showing them, you don't have to do this. Listen, let's break the epidemic of this. Let's change the outlook of what they look at us, how they look in on us. And it's not just with African Americans, it's with all race. But what I'm trying to do is change the format of what these kids are reaching for. And it can't be drugs. It can't be the street life. It can't be always hip hop, because hip hop, just like the media perpetuates division in our country, hip hop perpetuates music, violence, and drugs. You know, they do it. They do it. Hip hop is no different from what's being perpetuated. So I'm not a big fan like I used to be. I'm not a big fan of hip hop music for our young kids. You got to be old enough to be able to handle and understand that what they're saying is all false. You know what I mean? It's all fake.
Right.
It's not real. So you have to be able to, you got to have an understanding of what hip hop music is. And, you know, these kids are not able to understand that at that young age. So they're thinking everything these guys do is real. Everything, the lifestyle is all real. You know, the videos, they see these guys with homes and cars and flashing these jewelry. It's all real. The girls is all real. It's not. It's all gimmicks. It's all set up. It's all for the show, you know? So I try to get out
right.
here and reach out to them through that by showing them other avenues, because when I was a kid, when I was a teenager, when I was on the corners, I'd not seen not one single person come back to the community and say, Marcus, listen to me. There is a rec center down the road. You need to go and get involved. I seen you play basketball. I seen you play football. I seen you play basketball. You got a good arm. I believe that you would be best in this. Go and sign up for the rec league down at the rec center. Please do anything. Get off of this corner, though. It is not for you. Well, there's nobody doing that. So it's my duty to make sure I point these kids in the right direction. So I go back to my neighborhood, my communities, and I share with these kids, hey, man, why are you out here? Kids that I saw in diapers doing what they're
right.
doing. Kids that I saw in diapers when I was out there. I was like, man, how old are you now? 15, 16. What? You were, last time I saw you, man, you were out here, you know, hugging on my leg. What are you doing out here doing this now? So I just go back and reach those, because there are some still my age. I go back all the time, and there's some my age, 30, 31, 32, 33, my age, still out there doing what I used to do. I don't even dare bother trying to reach them. They're just too far gone. But, you know, they're influencing our young kids, our future. That's what I care about more. I care more about our future. I care more about the kids who can change this world, the kids who can change the epidemic in this world, the kids who can be fathers and marry and be fathers inside our homes, the kids who can be teachers inside our schools, the kids who can be leaders inside our government, the kids who can be coaches on our football and basketball teams, the kids who can be mentors to the orphanage homes and stuff like that. That's who I'm trying to reach and change and break this cycle and make this a different world, especially in my city. I call myself the son, I don't know I've told you this, but I call myself now the son of St. Pete, you know? I'm like, my goal is to just try and change the mindset of our community and just see our kids. I want them to think different. That's why I reach out to them like I do. I just want them to have a different mind.
Well, you come with credibility because you've lived a life too, and you've
mm-hmm.
gotten out of it. So that
yeah.
is a huge point to be made, and you are very well spoken, and I'd love to just give your poetry a shout out too, because the
oh, yeah.
last time I got to see you was at Clearwater Center for the Arts, and it was
mm-hmm.
just so inspiring. I sat there with my 17-year-old daughter and videoed it too. I'll share it with my listeners.
I can do a piece for you too later, you know, in the show.
Yeah, that's great. We have time. But it's just the power, because you can hear your heart coming through your words, and I think that's vital for a lot of kids these days, because they're not getting the love really that they need in any environment. School is just pushing them to test, do well on tests. Our teachers are being
mm-hmm.
crushed. They're not allowed to use creative methods in their classrooms because they're so pressured to make sure their kids do well, you know, the students do well on tests.
Yes. Yeah.
It's just a nightmare all the way around. Then they come back home, and you know, even if the dad is working, with the economy the way it is, it's mom and dad are both having to work so hard, and there's no energy or time to spend with the kids. It's just heartbreaking all the way around. So, and I have that experience in, you know, North Greenwood when I was at the MLK Center, and just the kids that would come there every day to enjoy the air conditioning and just to get an apple from me, Marcus. I love
those
kids.
Right.
I mean, you know,
right.
And they were, I miss them. They were great kids.
Yeah, anyway. these kids, all these kids want, these kids, and I see it in my son when I try to get a litmus test to what kids, youth, are looking for when they are out here and, you know, out here in the streets or what have you, wherever I see them at. I try to get a litmus test by looking at my son, and I see my son, and I see all my son wants to do is be under his dad. All my son wants to do, and my daughter, all my son and my daughter wants to do is be wherever their dad is. They love their mom. They love their mom. Like I said, you know, a mom's hands are for hugging. A dad's hands are for protecting. So, you know, they're wanting to be where there's protection at. And the dad is the protection. So now these kids, what I'm seeing is now, so these kids are looking for guidance. These kids are looking for leaders. These kids are looking for a dad. And what I'm witnessing out here in these streets is the kids that don't have a dad, that kids that don't have a mentor. You know, I mentor at a school here in Pinellas County, and I tell you what, you know, the two kids that I mentor at this school, they want nothing more than for me to just be there every day, and they look forward to it. They're happy every single not every day, but every week. They look forward to seeing me every week. And they've asked me, both of them asked me, can you come, because they're in fifth grade. They said, Marcus, will you be able to come to my school when I go to the sixth grade? Because the school they're at, they don't have sixth grade and up. They have to go from, you know, remove them. They have to go to a different school after fifth grade. So they want me to follow them to their grades, their new school when they reach the sixth. And I'm like, you know, sure, I'll follow you. I'll come and mentor you. But what I realized looking at them also, my mentees, is that they just want the guidance. They just want a man to just show them, you know, that there's better, that there's a way, that there's love. They're looking for someone who cares to invest. And our daughters, too. I think that the reason why a lot of our kids are, I don't like to say messed up. I don't think that that's a good word. I think the reason why a lot of our kids are misguided is the correct word. The reason why a lot of our kids are misguided is because the moms, And I don't want to be so, I have to be brave to even go here and say this, but it's because of the moms are misguided. The reason the moms were misguided was because the dad wasn't there. You get what I'm saying?
Right.
And it's because the dad needs to show. Yes, the dad has to show the boy and the girl. You know, they say that a mom can't raise a man to be a man, but a dad can't raise a girl to be a woman either. You get what I'm saying? So, but the dad has to be that guy, that leader in the home. And the dad has to be the one guy who shows the boy and the girl that there is love. See, when the daughter's looking for a man, she has to know that there's no other love. She has to know that a man has to love her the way her dad loves her. You get what I'm saying?
Right.
So she's going to look for the same kind of love in the man that her dad gave her. Okay? So she's not going to expect nothing. She doesn't want nothing less than the love her dad gave her. And if her dad is loving her with all his heart, putting all his time into her, she's going to make sure that her man is the same kind of man. Loves her with all his heart and invests nothing but his time into her and the family and everything else. And the same with the son. The son would be a reflection of the dad if the dad puts in the time with him. Well, the dad would be the same way. The son would be the same way with his kids. You know, unfortunately, I had, you know, My biological father, I do not know my biological father whatsoever. I don't know him. But my stepdad came, I had a stepdad that came into the picture. My stepdad was a working man, but the thing was, he was a non-involved working man. But nevertheless, I saw somebody there. I saw a man there. And he loved me. He did love me. He showed me love. He just didn't get as involved with any of the things I was doing. He didn't put as much time in, But he disciplined me when I needed discipline. He corrected me when I needed correction. He loved me when I needed love. And he guided me when I needed guidance. But he never, ever just got involved with the things I cared about. And that's why that's what I see in my son. My son wants to know that I care about the things he cares about. And that's what I see in my mentees. They want to know I care about the things they care about. And so what I'm seeing in the other kids that I speak to, they want to know that somebody out there cares about what they care about.
Right. Well, I mean, just recently with the shooting in South Carolina, and I think the first reaction I had was, where was that young man's parents? Why weren't they listening to, there were so many signs, and for the 9 lives that we lost, and I'm going to try to, you know, keep it together on this, because those 9 lives, they were some beautiful people. And
yes,
just the reactions of the families that they went in there and told them, you know, you have destroyed me, but I forgive you. What a powerful lesson to the entire country.
Yes.
But once again, it comes back to the parents. Where were those parents? Where was the family? Where was anybody to keep that guy from going off on such hatred and on a wrong path to, you know, anyway. Like I said, I'm trying not to cry because
what I say to that is, who was taking those pictures of him holding the flag and the gun? I mean, did he have a time shot on his camera or whatnot? But I don't believe so. Somebody was taking those snapshots of that guy. Somebody was taking a picture of that guy. And I wanted to know, whoever it was that was taking a picture of him knew about his hate, okay? Whoever was taking that picture of him is probably as involved in the same hatred he's involved in, because you don't just get involved and help a guy take some hatred pictures if you're not in agreement and feeling the same way and having some of those same feelings as you. So I'm wondering, somebody was pushing this kid, somebody was putting this kid on, somebody was doing something to rile this kid up in the way that, because he was 19 years old. I mean, this is in this generational time where we're at, in a tech age, in this technology age, and space age, and we're in this the millennial world, in this world that we're living in, that kind of hatred was almost forgotten about where you raise your kids up on it. You get what I'm saying? That kind of hatred was almost forgotten about where you raise your children on it. That was back when I was young, where parents were raising their kids on that kind of hate. I've not seen that kind of hate anymore. So my thing is, somebody raised that kid on that kind of hate. He didn't just find that hate out of the box and started to go with it. Somebody was raising that kid on that kind of hate.
Well, and I heard a story, and I'm not sure if it's true, and I hate repeating stuff like this, but I heard a news report that he told his parents to give him the money for the gun so that whatever he did with it, it wouldn't come back on them. Hello? Alarm signs everywhere.
That's going back to
parents. The parents have to have a responsibility. I mean, I understand that it's rough.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, with the economy the way it is, you've got two parents that have to do some kind of work, or like in my situation, and I tend to laugh people laugh when I tell them this. I've chosen a lifestyle so that I can be a stay-at-home mom. There's times where I don't stay at home, but I'm usually doing something that my kids can be involved with too. And, you know, home education is the way I went, because my children had different learning needs, and I have a degree in education. So I'm like, okay, I'll use my college degree. Not everyone can live the way that I've chosen to live. And I understand that, you know, there's pressure to drive the brand new car, buy the $200 tennis shoes, you know, spend too much money going out all the time eating or whatever. But we've got to drill it back to taking care of our children, because we're losing generations of kids from just them being not parented. I mean, they're being babysat by electronics, the Nintendos, the cell phones, everything. So that's why what you do is so very important, because you're working with the kids And even those two kids that you're mentoring, you know,
right.
having that kind of an investment in a child will change, can change the world. It can, because you don't know where they're going to end up being and how many people they're going to, reach out to. So that's why
right.
I love you, Marcus.
Yes. I love you too, Karina. You've helped me so far. You've helped me get so far in my career. I just can't thank you enough. But I wanted to tail off that testimony I was sharing earlier with people about my friend robbing me. This is basically the story of my my transformation and what happened to me. And basically, if I may go back into it. It was, got to change the subject here now. But it was basically, with the days I remember leaving the hospital, begging and pleading God, asking him, telling him that I would not go back into that lifestyle, I went back into it. Now, I went back into the streets, 4 months removed from my friend, 4 months removed from my son's birth. It was Christmas Day. I tell this all the time. It was December 25th. It's Christmas Day, 2006. And this is my four-year-old daughter at the time and my four-month-old son at the time, with my girl who I was with. And we were all having, a good time on Christmas Day, opening up gifts, opening up presents, unwrapping, having the most fun. About 9:30 that night, I kissed my kid. About 9 o'clock that night, I kiss my kids goodnight. I tell them, hey, I go back. I'll see you guys in the morning. So I drove my car back to the south side. And when I got back to the south side to get to my house or my apartment, rather, I stuck my key in the door. As I stuck my key in the door, my phone rang. I see my phone, and it's my girl, on the other line. And I say, what is it she wants? I just left them over here. What is it she wants? And when I answered the phone, it was, the sound I can hear it today. It was a sound I never forget. When I heard screams, I heard yells, and I heard sirens going on in the background. And I'm wondering, what the heck is going on? And that's when I realized it was my girl on the other end screaming, saying to me in a subtle voice, trying to get across, Marcus, you need to get back over here. The house is on fire. And she said that in a very dramatic voice, more than I have just now, but you can imagine. So I heard that, and I rushed back over there, get back in my car, get back over to the north side where my girl's house was. And here I am staring at this big old house that I just left. And I'm staring at this house, and it is engulfed in flames. I'm talking engulfed. And I'm like, whoa, I'm in a state of shock. It hit me. I mean, I felt the heat coming from the street while I was parked at. I said, whoa, this is what just happened. And so I went into, I ran to the house. I tried to get into the house, but the firemen were standing there close to the house. They wouldn't let me in. They were told to stand down because of the flames were so hot and the roof was starting to cave in. But I tried to run into the house. Now, the only reason I started to run into the house was because when my girl grabbed me, she told me, she said, Marcus, you need to, she said, Marcus, I asked her, I said, so what's wrong? Is everybody out? And she said, my daughter, Kiana, she said, Kiana is out. She said, my mother is out because her mom was there too. She said, my mother is out, but no, we couldn't go in and save, we couldn't get Marcus out, which is my son's name. She said, but we couldn't get Marcus out. We couldn't get him out. He's still in there. He's still in there. And I said, what are you talking about? She said, he's still in there, Marcus. He's in there in the house. He's burning. He's out. What? So that's when I tried to run for the door. And I couldn't because the fireman's saying no. So I'm beating on this fireman. This guy has got me twice my size. And I'm beating on this fireman trying to just get him to let me in his house. Because at that time, I had nothing to live for. I was a drug dealer. I was a nobody. I offered life nothing. I didn't care. All I wanted to do was go in and die with my son. I knew I couldn't get in there and save him. I knew I wasn't coming out. All I wanted to do was go in and cradle my son and curl up and die. That was my mindset. I said, just end it all now. Let me just end it all. I can't take what I'm seeing. Let me end it all. Let me get in there with my son, and I'll end it right now. I'll end my life. I don't care anymore. I have nothing to live for. I have nothing to offer. I have nothing to give anybody. Leave me. Just let me go, and they wouldn't let me go. I'm trying to fight to get into this house, and they're like, no. And then I couldn't do nothing but resist, you know, so I just fall to my knees. I cry out to God. And I asked God three questions. And I said, God, why? Why do my son, why? Why do we have to die this way? And I asked God, I said, God, why couldn't I go in and save my son's life? And he said, well, because it wasn't your mission to save your son's life. And I heard the voice of God speak to me that day, because if you read the Bible, it says in Isaiah, the book of Isaiah, that he hears the voices of our cries all the way up into his temple, even into his ears. What that means is that in a desperate moment, when you're in a very desperate situation and you cry out to God, God will answer you, because he says he hears the voices of our cries. So I cried out again and I asked God, well, why, God, why couldn't the firemen who are trained, they're trained, they should go in there and save my son's life. Why couldn't they go in and save my son's life? And he said, because it wasn't their mission to save your son's life, Marcus. It wasn't their mission. So I said, well, God, why? Why? Why couldn't my son's life be saved, God? Please tell me. And he said, because it was your son's mission, Marcus, to save, you understand?
Yeah.
And that's when I realized that God was calling me to do something greater. God was calling me to do something phenomenal, something fantastic. He was calling me to a higher calling. I didn't know what it was meant for. This was in 2006. I didn't know he was prepping me for 2013, you know, when I started Sweat for Life Ministries. I didn't know that this is what I was going to be doing. But I now know, you know, I now know, because in the grass that day, as I was crying out to God, asking him why my son, God told me one thing. He said this. He said, Marcus, I want you to do me a favor. I said, what, God? Go and read scriptures, Ephesians 4:29, and that's why I found it, Sweat for Success says. It's now, you know, speak words of encouragement today for one life to be saved. And I'm thinking, okay, God, that's my mission. I knew that in 2006 that I was called to speak, because he told me, go feed the sheep. He told me, go and speak words of encouragement, because everything boiled down from when my friend put the gun in my head, and he told me it was because of my words that took him to where he was at. You get what I'm saying? It all went back to that beginning. And because of my words and what I said to my friend, it started from there. And that's why I got that scripture. And that's why I used that to propel myself forward. And like I said, again, in 2006, I knew I was called to speak. I just didn't know I was ready. I didn't know when. I didn't know the time. 2013, it hit me. I knew what to do. I hit the ground running. Every door just went to opening from there.
Well, and you've made quite a bit an impact, and I know that you have many more people to reach. Let's let everybody know one more time. It's June 26th. That's tomorrow, Friday.
Friday night.
Yeah, go ahead and let them know about where you're going to be.
Gateway Christian Center, 4355 Central Avenue, St. Petersburg, Florida. It starts at 6:30. Doors open at 6:30. Service will start at about 7. And we will be, it'll be a Friday night. It'll be a night of receiving God's power. I call it, the youth revival. But I do say it's open to everybody. So don't think because it pertains to youth. My calling and my mission is to the youth, but it's to everybody can come, okay? So, yeah.
Well, and I'll go ahead. I'm going to go ahead and share that on the Facebook wall for Citizen Voice Project for anybody that wants to learn more about you. I've got an event set up, and it's facebook.com Citizen Voice Project. And they can also find you on Facebook as well. Want to let them know how to find you there?
You can find me on Facebook at Mark My Words. I do have two pages, but I'm more active on Mark My Words. You can find me at Facebook, either or Marcus Clark Or you can go to my most active one is Mark My Words. It's spelled M-A-R-Q. You space it after that, then you go My Words. So it's Mark space My Words. That's how you do it. And you'll find me.
And on Twitter it's Mark
Twitter is Marcus Inspires. Instagram, Marcus Inspires. LinkedIn is Marcus Clark. And YouTube channel, Marcus Inspires. So you can go to my Facebook page. I got information on how you can get to my other links. And you find me there and share some of my messages with people. I do a daily inspirational message every day on Facebook. So you can go there. You'll get inspired through word. You'll get inspired through pictures. You get inspired through poetry, spoken word, through my YouTube channel. Just go there and enjoy whatever you like to get in, whatever your Kool-Aid, I like to say. Whatever kind of Kool-Aid you like to drink, go there and drink it. You know, it's there.
I do want to give a shout-out to a project that I'm working on right now. I've developed a fundraising challenge for the Safety Harbor Downtown Business Alliance. The Safety Harbor Downtown Business Alliance Incorporated is considered a public charity. We just got the letter from the IRS the other day. Yay! And basically what it is, it's a loyalty card program. We have currently have 26 merchants that offer discounts in Safety Harbor. And when you purchase the loyalty card, what happens is I will send you a SurveyMonkey ballot. And you get to vote, and there's three different categories. You get to pick a charity out of each category. We have national and state. We have a regional category, and we also have a local category. And you get to vote for one charity out of each category to get the proceeds of the sales of the cards. 100% of the proceeds are going to be donated. excuse me, I just want to give a shout out. I reviewed over 100 charities before 15 charities were decided on. Once again, we have three categories, national and state. In that category is the American Legion, Best the Book Bus, which is coming up on Saturday. I've got a show with her. My Hope Chest, which is a charity for breast cancer reconstruction. It's ladies that have survived breast cancer. And it's the only national charity that provides the women that don't have the funds to get breast cancer reconstruction. They call them their butterflies, so they do that for them. We have Pace Center for Girls, which is, I believe you've met Laura Snell. She's the chairperson of Pace Center for Girls. They are a phenomenal organization.
Yeah, I believe I met her. I know who you're talking about. Yep.
Yeah, they do. They do a lot about what you do. In fact, we'll have to get you hooked up with them so you can talk to the girls. And then we have Stop Bullying Now Foundation, who is another person that I would like to get you connected with. He takes phone calls personally. This is another national organization, but his name is Lowell Levine, and he has parents calling him from all over the country. Because he's very committed, because bullying is a huge issue, and much like what you said before, words are powerful, and we're losing our kids. They're committing suicide. They're giving up on life because of bullying. So that's another one of our issues. In the regional category, we have the Florida Autism Center of Excellence. That's a charter school that gets their kids from Pinellas, Pasco, Hillsboro, and I believe one more county, Polk County. We have Nomad Studio. That's a mobile art studio that goes around the region and offers art and inspiration for kids that wouldn't normally get that. They are actually going to be on the show tomorrow. We have Religious Community Services Incorporated. That includes the Haven House, RCS Grace House, which is a homeless outreach, and the Haven House is a domestic violence shelter, and we have RCS Food Bank, which is one of the largest food banks in Pinellas County, Suncoast Animal League, and the Tampa Bay Symphony. And then in our community category, we have Kids Campaign, which I've already interviewed the founders of Kids Campaign. That's a pediatric cancer support and a volunteerism group that is phenomenal. We have Mothers of Minors, which I've already interviewed Andrea on there too. She helps single parents that basically fall into the gap. You know, they make too much to get any social help from the government and not enough to pay the power bill. So she's there to help in times of emergency. Paul B. Stevens Exceptional Student Education Center. That's a school in Clearwater that helps kids in the autism spectrum. The Safety Harbor Museum and Cultural Arts Center. And the Impact Zone Recreation Center. And that's who I was telling you about, that they operate in North Greenwood. They do gang outreach and do a lot of phenomenal work with those kids. They take them to play flag football. They take them to church. And one of Joellen is the founder. One of her favorite things that she said to me, she goes, "Karina, I can get these kids up early on a Sunday and to church, so I know that I can get them, you know, going in life."
Mm-hmm.
She's very passionate about her kids. But
good,
we've got a
good,
few minutes left.
To many people.
Do you have a sample of your poetry that you would like to share? I hate to
put
you on the spot.
I share a piece real quick. I like to call this piece "Exist," and it goes like this: Who am I to make a difference in a world of nonsense with no content as I contemplate on how I can create change in a place and time that keeps us at a long-range distance? So our time spent together has limits. Wouldn't you say that the gimmicks and gadgets that we hold keeps us stagnant, leaving a hole to be filled that keeps us as a whole feeling empty? How are you feeling today? Because my feelings are quite simply filled with holes and gaps that can't be closed and tacked together unless our backs are tethered, living by the code of the military, never to leave a man behind. And our friends are soldiers we carry away from terror. They are never steps you climb, so don't break the backs of another man's spine trying to increase your incline, because the faster you do rise, the faster you will fall into oblivion. Living in your own world, not giving a care about those who gave all and all that gave and paved the way so you can sit here today and say, when you will graduate. And right now is not the time to procrastinate, so don't exaggerate to other classmates that you made straight A's and they're struggling with C's. To better serve yourself, help that friend exceed, and they will see that they have a friend in need. Indeed, the world would be a better place if we all ran at a better pace and speed. So if you're being called to lead, then lead and leave this place in a better shape in the way that you see fit, because I'll be the first to admit that we all want to quit on the exercise of our dreams when it seems a little bit too big and extreme to fit. So the message in this poem today is, create a world of your own existence, but don't forget this. We all need each other to exist. That's it.
That's so awesome.
Yes.
I want to thank you again, Marcus. And I do want to tell you how blessed I am. With your friendship, and how grateful I am that I organized that crazy event that I didn't think was successful, but it was a path that I believe I was set on to meet you and to be a lifetime friend of yours, honey.
Yes, you got the ball rolling, Karina. Trust me, I'm telling you, I know what you've done for my life, my career, things I'm gonna be doing. If it wasn't for you, I got to say this, if it wasn't for you giving me that chance, trusting in your instinct, you know what I mean? Trusting in your instinct to give me a shot. If it wasn't for you, I wouldn't be where I am today. I'm sorry, I don't know where else to trace it back to. I wouldn't be where I am today if it wasn't for you giving me that shot. So from the bottom of my heart, I really, really, really appreciate you. I love you. I love everything you've done for me. You continuously push my name out there. You continuously work for me. You continuously get me more speaking engagements and meeting with more people just to help. You care about kids like I care about kids. You care about people like I care about people. So I love the fact that you know somebody who cares just as much as you do to get the message out. And I'll forever be indebted to you for that, even though you might say I'm not. But in my eyes, anytime you call, you need me, I'm always there.
Thank you, Marcus. And thanks, everybody, for joining the show. And we will see you next time.
Yes. Thank you for having me, Karina.
You're welcome. Bye-bye.
Bye.